are listening to Smile Politely Radio. SmilePolitely.com is the place to go for all things local. Arts, culture, food and drink, music opinion, tech, and more. I'm Rebecca, and I'm joined today by two members of the Bashful Youngins, Aaron Short and Carrie Chandler Harrison. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
So, to get us started, I want to hear a little bit about your individual histories with music before you came together to be in a band. And I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about when you first became captivated by sound. What kinds of sounds led you to want to perform music and create it yourself?
Carrie's got a little more deeper roots in that, so I'll let her go first.
I was going to let you go first, but I actually come from a classical music background. I started playing percussion when I was in fourth grade, I think, and I guess the first time I was captivated by sound was kind of the marching band, symphonic band stuff. If you've ever witnessed that, especially at like U of I Stadium, there's just times where like they hit certain chords and you just get goosebumps. And I think that was the first time, like when my sister was in marching band, because she's much older than me. And then I always wanted to do that. So then I got to school and joined into high school and joined chorus. And our chorus director was amazing and kind of allowed me to feel music on a much deeper level. And I think that's when I kind of got involved with more so harmony music, like we do too. It's just because I feel like harmonies and things like that strike you on a much different level, for me personally, than other things. So,
mine's pretty quick. I always wanted to play guitar, like pretty much everybody does. And when I was 14, I got in trouble because a picture of me giving the middle finger got put in our yearbook. So I got grounded for a month, but I still got graduation money for 8th grade, so I took that and bought my guitars, and I had that month of doing nothing to learn, you know, get started learning guitar, so...
So captivity is what it is.
Yeah, so learned that, and then, you know, played all through high school and everything, and then college came, and I didn't play that often until I met her again at a party, and... She was playing a guitar and playing a song we both knew, and so I think I took the guitar from you, or...
Because I didn't start playing guitar until I was 21, and I was not... I'm still not a great guitar player by any means, but he was like, I'll take the guitar, and you sing.
So we did that, and then... Then she got me to start singing, which I had not done at all, really, except, you know, in my room, poorly, and... Then it kind of just came together like that, and I don't know, it wasn't until we started listening to, or at least me, and you two probably, but like Ryan Adams and artists like that, that made us want to start writing songs.
And I think both of us were kind of songwriters before we knew it. Like, I remember writing like poems that I thought were songs when I was really young.
Yeah.
I think the same goes for him, but we didn't get comfortable with it until we started working together.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So could you talk a little bit about working together, and specifically in the context of a two-person band? What I heard you describe about kind of an initial musical experience had to do with kind of both teaching and learning from one another, it sounds like. Is that still how it is to work together?
I think we still are learning every day, you know, learning new things about our voice or writing or arranging music in that fashion, but... It's definitely a different dynamic from working solo. You know, writing songs together with another person, I think, is... You have to be a lot more open than the people who kind of, like myself, sometimes write music just because, like, to feel better. Like, you're sharing that experience with somebody else.
Mm-hmm. And when we come together to write, it is different for us unless we write... If we write, like, something by ourselves and bring it, and then, you know, bring it together. Just because it is... being more open, but which is another learning experience, a learning process that we're going through that you have to be to get the best to come out of it.
Are there things that are different about being kind of two people in a band than to be like four or five? Because you're describing it in terms of like the difference of being a solo artist versus being in a band from that collaborative aspect. But I wonder if there gets to be kind of an intimacy of a particular creative kind of intimacy between two people who embark on a creative project, and if that ever feels oppressive or if it always feels wonderful.
We always laugh because we constantly get asked if we're married, which, by the way, we're not married. We're best friends, but I think that kind of attributes to the chemistry and that particular intimacy between two people being on stage rather than four or five. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's why people commonly ask us that. But I do think it's a whole another level, because instead of depending on three, four, five people in a band, it's you and another person making all the decisions and mm-hmm. collaboratively trying to find a way to do everything together.
And even like with bands, like, you know, if you have the lead singer, sometimes most of the time does all the writing and then brings it to the rest of the band, and then, you know, they'll kind of arrange it around it. But with us, it's we're both doing the writing, we're both doing the arranging and putting the harmonies together in that. And so yeah, you just kind of have to have the chemistry to be able to do that, I guess,
because it's like a brother-sister relationship almost. Like, there's things we disagree on, and you have to find a way to get over that without upsetting the other person, I guess.
She knows a lot more about the music theory aspect of it, so, well, more than I do.
Debatable.
Let's say more, a lot more than I do, so, like, the beats per minute and just stuff that I don't get, I just kind of, whatever comes out, and she gets more of the aspect of that side, and which helps a lot with the arranging and, like, with making the album, too, so
mm-hmm.
It's a good yin-yang there, I guess, in that aspect of it.
So, tell me how you would describe your music in terms of genre or in terms of style.
I think we generate to the indie folk Americana kind of alt-country world, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But within all those genres, and kind of any genre, they're all very general or vague.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of, like, you say indie folk, it's like, what does that mean? I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our songs are, to put this, they're slow, mm-hmm. or, you know, they're on a more deeper level, I guess. Which we... Not to sound pretentious, but which we take from the songwriters we listen to, like Ryan Adams and Jason Isbell, who are from that alternative country, and
yeah.
So we get that sound from that, and then I guess the harmonies and the instrumentation with the mandolin and the guitar and the strum patterns and stuff like that brings out the folk element that we have.
Yeah.
Because growing up, I mean, outside of like Simon and Garfunkel, that type of folk, I didn't really listen to.
Same here.
Traditional folk or anything like that, so I guess that just kind of came naturally with whatever came out, and the rest blends with our influences, I suppose.
Yeah.
So it seems to me like there is kind of a maybe renewed interest in some of the genres that you've mentioned,
mm-hmm.
in terms of contemporary music world. I mean, like, for instance, you know, Ryan Adams, Jason Isbell, like, you know, they're amazing, and they're playing everywhere, and there, you know, there seems to be this real fascination with that particular genre, which, as you're mentioning, like, you know, at least when I was in high school, was not as much of a thing. So I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about what kind of fascinates you about that genre of music, especially since, as you were mentioning, it sounds like maybe not one that you grew up with. What is that genre, even though it is this kind of general term? Like, it still seems to mean something in terms of that category of music, and why does it fascinate you, and what do you think about that genre has been people turn to it more recently?
I think a big thing is, like, you know, top 40s country stuff was kind of overshadowing some of those things for so long, and then all of a sudden Chris Stapleton comes out of nowhere, who has been this fantastic top 40s country writer, but came out as an Americana artist who, you know, people like Chris Stapleton and Jace Isbell and Ryan Adams, you can't help but listen to them for the first time, and their lyrics and their voices just strike you. Like, I think that's where Chris Stapleton blew up, is because everybody was like, oh my gosh, that voice.
Mm-hmm.
That voice just strikes you in the heart. And I think that's why this whole new kind of, I guess, revolution of that side of the Americana aspect is getting bigger. It's just because...
It is... It's song-driven, really.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lyrically and melodic and... And, like, with the top 40s country, that's, like, an industry now. So you have, like, the songwriter, the artist, the producer, and it's just whatever is going to make money, that's what comes out. And then you've got this, like, byway of of Nashville artists like Jason Isbell and Chris Stapleton, who can still be very successful, and they have been, you know, being song-driven, writing what they want to write. And and then I think with, like, the folk side, you know, with Mumford & Sons and the Lumineers bringing that, you know, to the forefront, and that kind of new style of folk that got really popular and played on, like, top 40 radio, like pop radio, kind of helps, because we like to stay melodic with our songs. But
it helps people that sometimes don't get outside of the radio, you know, what's playing on your top station on the radio, to branch out into other genres and realize that there's maybe some other stuff out there that they like.
Yeah.
And the simplicity of the songs, too, I like a lot. Just if you can hear a song, like, stripped down to nothing and you still love it, I think that's really, really cool. That it doesn't need, like, all this production or instrumentation. And, you know, a lot of bands like Jason Isbell and the Lumineers and Mumford & Sons and those bands can do that easily. And I like that.
Yeah.
That's what attracts me to it.
Yeah. How did you get your band name?
It started as a joke.
Yeah.
Kind of. We were like, what should we call ourselves? Because we went for so long as Carrie and Aaron. And it's like, you can only go by that for so long. And we kept saying, we want the something, something.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't think of what it is. And Aaron just jokingly said the Bashful Youngins one day, because he used to be pretty bashful. And we weren't so young at that point in time. But we just joked it off and then kept thinking of other things. And for some reason kept coming back to the Bashful Youngins. Like, it just stuck. It turned into a joke. Just, we couldn't end up getting out of our heads. It was catchy.
Yeah, that's pretty catchy.
And other people were telling us that, too. Like, yeah, go with it. Like,
we would just joke around and be like, oh, yeah, we're going to call ourselves the Bashful Youngins. Everybody's like, yeah, you should.
So you recently came out with an album entitled The Bashful Youngins.
Mm-hmm.
And could you talk a little bit about the process of putting together this album? I'm always really curious in hearing, for instance, how people know when they're ready to put an album together. You know, how do you decide that this particular collection of songs belongs in one space? And how do you decide how they kind of talk to one another, what arrangement they belong in?
Yeah, so what happened was a couple of my friends who own SCP Records in Danville let us come in and record Hellbound, which at that point it was just like, we just want to get something on recording and see how it goes and all that stuff. So brought the acoustic version in, didn't have the arrangement or anything like that. Luckily we had Jordan Cundiff and our friend Stefan Johnson there to help us, which, if you don't know Stefan, he's a musical genius, and I don't think we could have done the album without him.
Nope.
But we went in there and they helped us. They were like, what do you want for arrangement? And Stefan just did it without even thinking about it. Like, every take was exactly what we wanted.
Yeah,
he just knew.
Perfect for just telling him, this is what's in my head, and then he's like,
then he
all
just
right,
does,
and then
does it.
And so
in one take, and we hate him for that. But so we went in there, and we're like, oh, like, we recorded one song in a night. Let's keep this going. And then actually the record company came to us and was like, we want you guys to sign to our label,
mm-hmm.
which just meant they were interested in helping us with our creative process.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what happened is we went in there with completely stripped down songs, or not even have a full album finished, and wrote our songs while we were basically recording the album,
mm-hmm.
and arranging the songs while we were recording the album. So it was a little bit backwards than some people do it. But
how long did the whole process take?
We took it really slow.
We started in
real busy.
May or March of 2015.
May.
In May. And we finished
December.
This past 2015. December.
We definitely took our time with it.
Yeah.
We didn't want it to be rushed.
Mm-hmm.
Which at the time I hated, because I wanted to do it. Like, I wanted to go in and record and, like, get everything going. But looking back, I'm glad we took our time, because there were a lot of songs that needed, not a lot, but a few songs that needed readjusted or worked on more. And it allowed us to bring a couple songs that we wrote late in the game to put on the album, because
mm-hmm.
there's a couple songs that were written.
I literally wrote one of them at the
yeah.
studio
mm-hmm.
one night right before we recorded
yeah.
it. So
how is it different performing for you in a studio versus to a live audience? Are there different things you think about, different ways that you hear yourself?
I have a love-hate relationship with the studio.
Yeah.
I love it because you feel so inspired, but it is so draining. You listen to yourself when recording, you're like, oh, that sounds awful. Why did I ever write this song? Mm. So you have to get past that. Whereas when you're recording live, you have that feedback from people and people enjoying your music. Whereas in the studio, you're just in your head and that's it. So
in the studio, yeah, you're hearing everything back. And then if you hear one little thing you don't like, you want to immediately change it, which is nice to have a producer say, no, it's fine.
Like, get out of your head.
Yeah, get out of your head. So, because both of us overthink things way too much.
It's a downfall.
Just good and bad, but mostly bad. But yeah, it's in the studio. It was a lot different recording rather than playing live. Because right there we can feed off each other live, and we did record some of the songs where one of us is in one studio or one booth and one of us is in the other, and we can like look at each other and go off that way. But there are a few songs where we recorded by ourselves vocally and instrumentally and stuff, where it's just a different process if you've never been through it. So it takes a while to get used to it, but
So your album has this kind of stark cover image of the two of you looking out two windows. And the image is black and white with a little bit of blue color on the bottom, but it looks, you know, very stark. And at least for me, I'm looking at it, and there's like this kind of tension between two people sort of doing the same thing, but also it's kind of isolated as well. There seems to be kind of a loneliness in the image. Could you talk a little bit about how you chose that image and what it means in terms of the album as a whole?
Our friend Sarah Brown is a great photographer, also from the Danville area. And she took us to, like, do the shoot for the cover album. And as soon as we saw that in her camera lens, once she took it, we were, like, done. Mm. Like, that's the album cover. We knew it. And I don't know. I think the creepiness, I guess, and the like you said, the starkness of the image was, like, I don't know. That's what we want. That's...
it just fit the vibe of the album.
The album.
Mm-hmm. And its whole... And we took probably like 300 pictures that day.
Wow.
We were in an abandoned warehouse, and I don't know if she did that on purpose or if it was an accidental...
With the lighting.
With the lighting, but yeah, as soon as we were going through all these photos that night, and as soon as we saw that, really, that just encompasses the sound of the album, we feel, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about this kind of sound or the vibe of this particular album.
Like I said, it was a learning process because we really didn't have our full sound when we went to the studio. We didn't really know what we wanted our full sound to be, but it's interesting because as you start recording the album, you learn that there's 60 different ways to make one song. Like, you could put the same song with a really fast beat that's like cut time, or you could put it with a really slow beat or a different drum pattern, and it completely changes the feel of the song. So I think that was the other frustrating part of the album at first, because we were like, oh, what do we want it to sound like? It could sound like so many other things. But I think the album overall took on this, unfortunately, kind of somber feel to it. And we didn't mean for that to happen, but...
It was our first real, you know, writing songs, like, seriously. So just whatever was pent up inside of us, and which usually is...
I think a lot of people write due to sadness or frustration.
But and honestly, sometimes when we sit down and write songs, we don't even know what it's about at first. You basically vomit words onto a page that are in your head, and then you get done, you're like, oh, this is so sad. But you don't mean for it to be. It's what comes out. It's super therapeutic. So
could you describe how you see your band fitting into the landscape of music in Champaign-Urbana? I'm wondering, in particular, if there's a way that you would characterize a sound in Champaign-Urbana, maybe in relation to the genres that you work in, or kind of genres that you think dominate what people typically want to hear or want to experience.
I think Champaign's really known for their indie rock scene, and that's not a bad thing. I love all of them. I mean... Right now, Terra Terra, love those guys. You know, Grand Ambassador, all those guys kind of coming out right now and dominating the scene a little bit. are great, but I think Champaign-Urbana has always kind of tended to be a little bit of an indie rock scene. But then you have fantastic people like Rebecca Rigo and the Trainmen, and Kenna May, who's in Louisiana now.
The fights
that also kind of dominated the sound here, and I think it just kind of goes in spurts. But we really, really love like Kenna and Rebecca Rigo and the Trainmen and the fights, and I think we kind of fit more towards that. Yeah. But
and the music scene's eclectic enough here to where
it's so eclectic.
Everybody can fit in.
Yeah. And, there's a place for everybody in Champaign-Urbana, and I think that's why I've stayed in Champaign-Urbana, is because I love the music scene, because, you know, I think there was just a show that had the fights and Truth and who was the other, like, there's rap, there's country, and then there, I forget.
All in one bill.
Yeah, all in one bill. Just fantastic. Like, you don't get that at a lot of other places.
Could you talk about performance spaces that you've enjoyed in Champaign-Urbana? I mean, I guess what I'm more curious about is performance spaces. How do you think the performance space sort of changes the experience of performing? You know what I'm saying? Like, are there particular kinds of performances, particular kinds of shows you feel like are more able to happen in certain spaces versus others, and how does location kind of affect how you think about your music?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like bars definitely affect what you do, or venues in that sense. If you have a crowd who, you know, doesn't want to be up towards the stage or is just kind of wants to sit and listen to slow kind of background music, I mean, those are good shows to play, but you like it when the crowd is interacting with your music.
And
so,
especially with the songs that we play, you kind of want a more intimate audience, not loud and like rambunctious.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, playing at the bars is still great, but it's like we played a show at a place called Duncan Manor in Towanda, Illinois. It's an old, really old house that they're renovating in.
It's an old mansion like the post Civil War era.
And it was
so cool.
So intimate of a show. Like, we didn't have individual microphones, we just had regular a room microphone set up, and it sounded so good, and everybody was super into the show, and that was a really fun show to play. So
just singing Fireside in these like vaulted ceilings that made everything sound amazing. It was just so we love that stuff, but also being in a bar and having people, you know, dance and sing your music and have a good time is fun too. So
because we do have, we will play out with a band too, which is really fun, because it's completely different than what we do.
Yeah.
When it's just us two. And, yeah, those shows are really fun too, because you don't think about it, but, like, when you're recording these songs, like can people dance to some of these? But a lot of these, when we play with a full band, they are. People are dancing and reacting well to it, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's next for you? Do you have other recording in your future?
Oh, yeah. We're already like, let's record an EP.
As soon as we release it, I'm like, well, let's start writing the next one.
No, I know. No, we're just focusing on getting the album out right now and, you know, getting shows where we can be on bills with other people and be able to branch out to different audiences. We're opening for Paul Thorne on June 9th in Danville at the Palmer Arena, and that'll be nice because we both love Paul Thorne, too, but just trying to get ourselves out there when, you know, we fit a certain bill and be able to branch out to, I guess, a larger audience, like I said. And then eventually get back in the studio here probably sooner than later, because we can't keep these songs to ourselves forever, I suppose. So.
And the festivals, too, we like we want to do a lot of festivals and really just play out.
Yeah.
And get our music out there as much as we can.
Yeah.
Now that we've done all the work on the album, we want people to hear it.
So, speaking of that, we are going to end by hearing some of your music. We're going to listen to Hellbound from the album. Could you describe what people should listen to in particular when they hear this song?
Well,
this song was kind of weird. Like, we literally wrote this song in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And this was definitely one of the songs. It just happened. We took a 2-year hiatus and came back and we're like, all right, let's sit down and write. And this is the first thing that came out in 20 minutes. And it just started with the chorus, which was Hellbound. And it was definitely one of those songs that we didn't know what we were talking about when we wrote it. We just got the song done. We're like, oh.
Well, wonderful. Aaron Short and Carrie Chandler Harrison, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. You've been listening to Smile Politely Radio. SmilePolitely.com is the place to go for all things local, arts, culture, food and drink, music, opinion, tech, and more. Have a great day.
Now the sun has turned its back over this lost and tired soul, and the rearview mirror may dig me out of this relentless hole.
Lord, it haunts the will of me, and I keep losing sleep when I'm lost and lonely, cold, and I can't seem to earn my keep.
But I always seem to dig myself too deep. And don't you know it gets the best of me? Well, I'm hellbound and I'm torn down. Won't you save me from the wreck that is myself? And the sunlight doesn't seem as bright, 'cause you pulled the wool over my eyes. When the sun comes up, the water dries up. Oh,